Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. The next guest for the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is somebody I have been following for years on LinkedIn, and she has even more experience than my mere 26 years in the recruitment industry. This is Angela Cripps, and she is the MD and founder of Recruiting Gym. With 35 years across the industry, she's a globally renowned trainer, management consultant, coach, non-exec director, and mentor. And during this effervescent conversation, we talk about all things to do with training and development, a learning culture, how to ensure you're working for a business or leading a business that has learning and development at the very heart of it. What does good onboarding actually look like? What's Angela's experience and expertise in this area? What can we each do to upskill ourselves at whatever stage in recruitment we're at? We talk about that, networking, business development, and so much more. I promise you, you're in for a treat. So without further ado, let's jump into the episode. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard to find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn. And sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes. And for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And do you know sometimes when you feel like you really know somebody because you've been following them avidly for years, but you actually realize you've never actually spoken? We've nearly met in real life earlier on in 2024, but for the first time to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, I would like to welcome the globally renowned Angela Cripps, who is the MD and founder of Recruiting Gym, global trainer, management consultant, coach, NED, and mentor, and all-round amazing human being and fellow Gemini, apparently. Welcome to you today, Angela. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. The amount of birthdays in this last week, it's obviously because it was a bank holiday in August. If you work the 9 months, because I worked it out as a child, why is there so many people with birthdays around here? But Geminis, we definitely do rock recruitment.
We definitely do. I mean, if you believe in all that, but I think I've never met a Gemini I don't get on with. That's for sure. So I can't believe that people might not know who you are, because you have got a global audience. But for those who are not yet familiar with you, try and give us a potted history of your amazing 35 years in recruitment.
Okay, so as most, I fell into recruitment. I was actually temping while I was doing my A-levels. I had six jobs while I was doing my A-levels.
Wow.
Was one of them. And so when I needed a job at 20, I went back to them, walked in, said, can I have a job that's not to do with sales? I'd been commission only as a financial advisor doing sales for 2 years. 7 hours later, I ended up as a recruitment consultant. So 7 hours of interviews and trying to put me off. But once I realized, wait a minute, this isn't just sales. This is an amazing opportunity, and grabbed it with both hands, worked with a fantastic team, 11 women, very, very fabulous, glamorous, amazing. So got to work with all of those. Worked in five different locations for Blue Arrow over 13 years, ended up wow. in the training department. But my first interview, I said, have you got a training department? And they went, you know what? We've got an internationally renowned training department that have won awards. And I was like, right, yeah, this is the place for me. Because wow. I'd been training in my job before and I'd loved it then. So, yeah, that's how I ended up in training and development. And that was 25 years ago now.
Wow, very long time ago. And since then, you've obviously, like you say, you've travelled the world. I think when I was talking to you off camera about where our listeners are, I think you've inhabited every single continent on the planet, haven't you?
Well, that was the great thing, because I was told, I used to go to psychics every year, and I just used to do it as entertainment, but they were right so many times. And one right. told me when I was 23, that I would end up in training and I would travel the world with it. And I thought, well, I can't do that. I'm working for a company. How do you travel the world as a trainer? But I ended up.
Wow.
So that's... yeah, just connecting with people on LinkedIn, all for free. Thank you, LinkedIn. In six different locations I started with that I'd wanted to go to. I'd worked in Hong Kong and Dubai with Mace, the construction people and their in-house recruitment team.
Yeah.
Got the bug for it there. I'd worked all over Europe with Lander Associates, but had not gone further afield. And then when my daughter went to university, I thought, great, I've got 3 years where not really any ties. She's not going to be around a lot. Let's go. Because I was always working. My friends went to uni, they did the year out, gap years, got traveling. I missed all of that.
Yeah.
When it came to my sort of mid to late 30s, I was suddenly like, right, okay, let's get
now
out.
Now it's your time.
What's there?
And I didn't realize. Well, I didn't realize, but we'll come back to your story in a second, but I didn't realize what a collision of our stories there are, because I'm exactly the same. I started work at 20, having done my A-levels, and I always worked all the way through. And I just found that really interesting. We'll definitely have to have another conversation off camera about that. So returning to your daughter's gone to university, you've got all this wealth of recruitment experience. So what was your vision in terms of training and development? So what were you offering in terms of, you know, maybe compared to other people?
Yeah, so it's the training with the consultancy and the coaching.
Okay.
I never liked going into a company doing one day leaving and that was it. I didn't get any joy out of that. Yes, on the day, but for me,
yeah,
always about seeing people grow and develop and seeing companies grow and develop. So whether it was different or not, I mean, who knows, there's bound to be people out there that do what I did. But it was working with the owners and the directors, first of all, creating their three-year business plan, and then training the managers to deliver on those objectives. So the founders and directors loved it because they were working so hard trying to achieve what the business. I said, that's not your job. You're the visionary. You set the plan. It's your managers under you that actually deliver it through their people. So we would train the managers, and through that we'd get them to actually train the consultants as well. And sometimes that worked really well and they didn't need me anymore. And I said to them, I don't expect to be needed after 18 months. I expect to be made redundant, because that way you've got your team doing it for you and you can carry on and everything's set up and you can evolve. And that worked really well in quite a few companies. There were some where the managers, it just wasn't their forte to train and develop. It wasn't what they liked.
No.
And therefore, I would carry on training the consultants as well and get in at that level. But normally it would be the directors and the management team, and through that, everything would get delivered. So,
well, because you're creating a cascade effect, aren't you?
Yeah.
So it's creating a culture of coaching and learning continuously. Yeah. But like you say, you're not detracting from the visionaries and those who are strategically growing the business. So that's really incredible. And where do you sit today? Because obviously you've got your own broadcasting, you do this as a day job as well, like, you know, like I do. So talk us a little bit about where we're at today in 2024.
Yeah, well, I decided at the end of 2019 to do a bit of online training with Alex Moyle, who founded the Recruiting Gym.
Yep.
So timing wise, that was probably perfect. So my objectives for 2020 were to get some of my stuff online. So it was there, it's repeatable. I don't have to be there to deliver it.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a business planning for success for consultants course. And then we realized we both got a management program. So we pulled the two together. So it's a phenomenal leadership and management program. And we just finished the recordings the week before lockdown.
Wow.
For those courses. And the aim was, it was online, but it's, we call it online learning powered by humans. So there was face-to-face training as well that you could add on as part of it. And there's coaching and Zooms and all of that. So it was a real hybrid of stuff. And I thought, oh, this is great. You've got the best of both worlds here now. Because I had dabbled in online training before. You'll see me as one of the experts in Recruitment Juice. I'd worked with those guys, helped set, create their temporary side of the business. They had the perm side for many, many years, but they didn't have the temp side. And I used to run a temp team with 1,500 temps out a day.
Goodness me.
So that was, yeah, a big forte of mine as well. And therefore, getting into this, yes. So I wasn't going to do as much traveling because I've still got both my parents. So I wanted to spend a bit more time with them and I wanted to do some online stuff. So they say, be careful what you wish for, because obviously
it
happened. Didn't travel at all and everything was online. So at least that sort of fast-tracked probably 2 or 3 years of
I was just about to say, you were already kind of on that trajectory, but what it actually did, it manifested it much quicker for you, which is, looking back now retrospectively, was probably the best thing that could have happened.
Well, yeah, because we had so much time and I think we had 4 online courses at that point and 2 trainers by the end of the year, because I knew all these amazing trainers that I'd worked with over the years.
Yeah.
They're all sitting at home doing it. I said, right, let's get your stuff online. We've got the platform. Let's use that. So by the end of the year, we've got like 100 online courses, nearly 30 trainers that have contributed to all those. And over the last couple of years, I've now created an associate team of 12 amazing coaches and trainers based around the world that then deliver
fantastic
stuff as
well. So it's back up. I was going to say, it's almost gone like full circle, hasn't it? Because although we can all access, you know, your incredible, you know, the manifestos of all these different training people, I guess, that you've collated, and that's incredible. I think people do still benefit from that one-to-one and the sort of being in the office and seeing, you know, you get the vibe of a culture when you're a trainer, don't you? Go in and see what the environment's like. You can't really replace that in an online forum. So I love the fact that you've kind of covered all the different angles there. So I mean, gosh, you've literally sat on like almost every side of the recruitment journey, really. And I think, as
I was saying that in-house, even before I joined recruitment, I recruited people into my team, because a bit of a pyramid scheme, you know, the old 80s financial services. So I recruited a team of 5 under me. So I hadn't thought about that. I was recruiting at 18.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely were. I mean, you know, and I love that when you, because when I read your profile, when you listen to this now, guys, go and read Angela's profile on LinkedIn, because what I like is it's very personable. And you talk about the areas of the job that you sign off the blue arrow bit saying, I loved my job. And I just love that, because I'm like, I feel like that about my first ever recruitment company as well. Like, I just loved it. It was just, you look back now, I think it was actually quite, not easy, but it wasn't very stressful compared to maybe as you go further into your life, maybe. So, I mean, look, to contextualize it, I think what's really interesting about inviting somebody on with your prowess and the sort of people that you've accumulated, I suppose, is that you can share with our community, with our audience, some of the best bits that when anybody drops into a podcast like this, which I'm always very grateful for, it's because they want to learn something. And that's the reality. That's why they're listening. I'm sure they're very interested in your story, but they want to learn something. They want to take something away. And our audience is we get a lot of leaders listening that are, you know, wanting to cherry pick all the best ideas, you know, what can they do? And we also get a lot of people who are on the new, you know, they're very new to recruitment. They're, you know, demographically, you know, starting their career, going, right, I want to know everything now. That was, you know, that was you and me a very long time ago. So bearing that in mind when I ask you these questions, you know, I guess because of how you're positioning your recruiting gym and how you train people, if you had the ear of one leader right now, what do they need to do right now to ensure they've got the best learning culture for their business? Like, what do they need to almost take that step back to say, because so many people come to us as, you know, my day job as a rep to reckon, it's like, well, I want a really strong learning and development culture. Well, how does the leader know whether they have?
Yeah, I think the word that came into my head is back to collaboration again.
Okay.
You can't enforce a learning culture on people. Luckily, it's not happened often, but certainly throughout my time, I've certainly been in situations where people have been put on a course for whatever reason and really didn't want to be there.
Right.
And that doesn't help anyone. And actually, then everyone else in the course is going to diminish their experience as well. So for me, one thing that I did take from Blue Arrow and their training department is they would have a training offer every year.
Okay.
It's called the training offer with the year next to it. So come September, October, we'd actually all get together and the training team, of which there were 23 at one
point. Wow.
I know, it was massive.
That's amazing.
There was about eight when I started, but we got up to 23. It was a big old company. And September, October, we would be looking to gather the information from the appraisals. That's where it all started from. So the appraisal documents that were happening around then, okay, what are people saying they need? Where do they want to go? What's the succession plans for the people within the business? And I think that step gets missed quite a bit, where people go, oh, they need this, they need that, because something's not happening in the business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's reactive. What we wanted to be was proactive with the training and the development. So, okay, what's the plans for next year? How many people want to move into management, want to be billing managers? How many people want to move up to senior recruitment? Because that would then determine, well, what do we need to be training now so that they've got the skills when they get there? And again, that's probably another element of it. Train people before they move.
Yeah.
Don't get them doing the job, then realizing I can't do this. And you potentially lose them out of the business because they've gone from being very successful in what they did. They've been promoted. They've got the title. They're really excited. They then start doing the job and their training might be booked for next month, 2 months through. Who knows? None at all, maybe. We know a lot of that happens. But people get promoted to manager and actually they're not suitable for it. So what we want to make sure is start drip feeding what they're going to need. Start giving them access to the training and to observing. I used to go off and observe people. If I set up a care desk, I knew nothing about care. So I went and spent a day in our Ealing branch because they had the biggest care desk in the company.
Yeah.
So learning off of other people and seeing what they do. And I'm glad you said that you've got people that are just joining. We're obviously on the same wavelength because we've got two webinars, one called My Life in Recruitment. I'm glad to say Alicia's going to be on the stage at the NEC with me in October.
Yay!
We put it live as well, but there's lots of interviews there for people that have been there, done it. It's a minimum of 15 years. That's sort of the cutoff. So I want people that were before the financial crisis and have experienced a lot.
Yep.
So that time will probably go up as time goes on. So there's a series of those to learn from people that have been there, done it. And then you've also got the Meet Your Recruiter, which a lot of companies, hashtag Meet Your Recruiter, it's got its own hashtag now, where people are actually using that to introduce new people and utilizing them, getting them onto social media and posting right from the off. So we try to make sure that you're covering all bases because people learn in different ways. So
Absolutely.
If you want the training culture, if you want people to be wanting to learn, then ask them first of all, find out, have those conversations, make sure you're doing appraisals, identifying what routes people want to take so you can be pre-warned of what you're going to need. You can plan your training offer for the next year.
Well, that should be in the onboarding of a new employee. If we're talking about the meet the recruiter level, the trainee level, that should be before they've even set foot through the door. Otherwise, you're just in reactive mode the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, I've been writing onboarding programs for over 20 years now. And get that right can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
We know it's a tough job. We know we lose a lot of people in those first 6 months because they don't realise what a tough job. And the reason it's a tough job, it's like 15 jobs in one. I used to say 10, but I put a post out on LinkedIn a couple of weeks ago and said, right, what are we missing? And there was at least another five in there.
It's always evolving. Anyone that says we're just telesales, you can get to the back of the room.
No. So being able to do all of those jobs to a competent level, my goodness, which is why we never stopped learning. That training offer, we could go and pick, what do we want next year? So every time we had an appraisal or our quarterly business reviews, we could look at the training offer and say, right, these courses are coming up. These are available. We want to go on these. I would like that, please. So it's like a menu that you've got that you can choose. So go and ask your people, give them an offering that's relevant to them, but also relevant to where the business wants to go.
Yeah.
And do it in different ways. Do explore, because some people love the 2 hour Zoom. We don't tend to do more than 2 hours at a time on a Zoom. Others will love the whole day in a classroom, learning and filling it up. Others want to do it in their own time.
In their own time. You've got different learning styles, like you have everything. But I think I love that. That was quite a mammoth answer, really, to quite a sort of simple question, I suppose. But I think it's really important to set the scene, because I imagine that there are people listening where they have been on a course, or they have been in training academy with somebody who's a bit more reluctant. And it does create quite a toxic effect. It's not a great effect, but you always have to go back a step and uncover why is that. And I do actually really genuinely want to say, I imagine there are a lot of leaders who are probably fessing up here going, I don't think I've ever actually asked what people need from this. I think we're just naturally, because we are always working at pace, it's such a competitive job that we do, regardless of what you recruit or how you recruit or where you recruit in the world, we are always looking at the next step, looking at the consequence, looking at the next step. And so we tend to find that things like training, coaching, development, personal development, they tend to be quite reactive. And I think that's why inviting on people like yourself, it's really important that people hear that. Actually, that's the wrong way around, because if you set your stall out right, whether and the billing manager role, going on that trajectory and becoming a leader of somebody else, a mentor to somebody else, you've got to get these foundations right for yourself. Otherwise, you're just creating lots of problems further down the line. I always think it's like a false economy, is what I'm trying to say, of not focusing strategically on learning and development.
Well, because. The thing is, if the training is actually linked to the job to start with, then okay, you're on a good starter. But what we see time and time again is sometimes it's not about knowledge and skills. So if we look at the last couple of years, so for about 18 months, we've been banging on about BD. So in 2022, when it was a real height, we know it goes in cycles. We know that was not sustainable in any way, shape, or form. So what are you doing to build business for 2023? So we were pushing the BD elements then, and that's probably the most that we've done, the training over the last 18 months has been around business development. But you will get people saying, okay, they need BD, they don't know how to do BD. And it might be they haven't got the skills, they haven't got the knowledge, they don't realise there's a structure to it, a process, a way to handle objections. There are actually things you can learn that make it so much easier. But sometimes it's not that. Actually, it's more about fear of picking up the phone.
Yeah.
Could be a lack of confidence because of the lack of knowledge, but sometimes it's not. I mean, we've seen it as a cultural thing now.
Yeah.
We've got a generation that didn't pick up the phone, didn't ring people. It was all on text or messaging. And it hit me recently. We were having a discussion. As kids, we had to phone someone's house. Okay, so you're ringing your friends to see if they're coming out, they can do this, what's happening, school, whatever. But you knew it wouldn't be them answering the phone.
It'd be the parent.
So that skill of and confidence to be able to pick up a phone, dial, and speak to an adult at the other end. So someone that you would perceive higher than you. That's been some of the critical skills that a lot of people don't have now. So the thought of ringing up an HR director. Or an IT director to speak to them about recruitment just totally scares some people to death. So it's really delving into what's missing. So that's why I love assessment days. where you get the chance to really dig into what people are capable of. So yeah, everyone can do a sales call, but to what competence level? So our competence framework had 9 levels for each competency, and there were 12 competencies. So you could very quickly pinpoint, what does this person need this quarter, this year, to develop? And I do question how many companies. Now, that obviously was a large company with a lot of resource, but it doesn't matter.
I would argue that, and I am being, I'm going to be deliberately a little bit divisive here, but I would suggest that you mentioned 2022, which anyone that's been around for more than a decade knew it wasn't going to last. And I was almost like, well, how long is this going on for? Because like this ain't lasting. It's a bit like a really nice bar of chocolate. You know it's not going to last forever. Mm. And of course, recruiters who were brought into the industry because COVID, nobody hired trainees at all in 2020. 2021, not many. You know, we don't really, as a business, we don't do, but we can see what our clients are doing. And people were still kind of very wary. They'd rather bring in experienced people because it's, you know, they know what they're doing. Yeah. So that the surge in trainees and inexperienced recruitment hires in 2022 was just insurmountable. You know, companies were doubling their headcount overnight with trainees without the foundation. So now what you have 2 years later, 2.5 years later, is recruiters who have they want to be successful but do not have the skills, potentially the psychology, because of what you've just described there, because they've not needed to pick up the phone and get through gatekeepers, find creative ways to get through to decision makers, be able to deal with objections and handle those reservations, because they've not needed to. And what we're seeing is, you know, we're having to, I guess, find the wheat from the chaff of those that actually want to learn and want to be able to almost strip right back to the basics, and those that literally haven't got it in them to be able to do that. And I always just say to them, life is just way too short. You need to go and do something else where you're not going to get that level of rejection every day. So, I mean, are you observing it, I guess, from the other side of the coin, I suppose, this, and I'm not being divisive on generation, by the way, because it's incidental. This isn't being disrespectful. This is just incidental. You came into recruitment in 2022 or post. The likelihood is that you've not had to fight for that business until this year.
Yeah, so it was a real shock. The end of 23, we hit recession. And so for many people, they'd maybe over-recruited, thinking it would carry on. Yeah. So now they've got too many staff and they've got people that can't go out and generate new business for the company. But it's trainable. That's the thing. We were saying, okay, if it's quiet now, get ready, get your tactics ready, get ready so that when it does come again, because it will, and
it always
come out of recession, we've got a general election coming up, all of these things will make a difference. And there was a lot of people saying Q3 it would turn around anyway, so all of that is coming to fruition. So get ready now, get don't wait, because when they're busy, that's always the excuse: too busy, haven't got time to develop and learn. But do it through the work. One of my favorite things as a manager was to observe, to go out on client meetings with my team, to sit and watch them do an interview, to observe from afar sometimes, where I'll be sitting there pretending to be doing something else, but actually I'm really listening to what they're doing, and to be able to give them feedback in their own reviews and appraisals, because it's that interest in them to develop them. And not surprisingly that I ended up as a trainer, because that's what I'd always wanted to do. I'll only be a manager for a year, because they said, well, you can't be a manager, you're too young, and you've never you can't be a trainer because you're too young, you've never been a manager, no one will listen to you. I was like, okay, I'll be a manager for a year, then I'll go into training.
Wow.
I loved it. I loved the manager. So I think about 4.5 years in the end, because it was all training and development. That's what the job was for me anyway, to make sure my premise was always, I want you to be better than I was.
Yes.
So I want to
But that altruism is why you've obviously clearly developed the sort of reputation that you have. And, you know, I want every single individual listening to achieve that within their own microcosm, that I think we've all got the potential to be able to do that. And I think it's understanding that if you're listening to this now, certainly in that early, in your early years in recruitment, and you are not feeling that this is the environment for you, that you're not getting this level of support and coaching and desk coaching, whether there's an external body like yourself, which I think is essential, because it gives you a very different perspective to well, this is the way we've always done it. When I was successful in the 1990s, how we did it. Wait a minute. You know, we're in 2024. So I think there's always arguments for and against. I think companies that do invest in an individual for their business is fantastic, because it shows that they have got a culture that they really believe in. It's like marketing. They really believe in it. Yeah. You've got the foundations there, but I think you have to also bring in external people. Otherwise, you just create this echo chamber, is what I'm trying to say. And I think, you know, those that are on their early years can take an awful lot from what you've said, because it is about achieving best practice and getting that constructive feedback and not being afraid. You know, if there is recording software, which a lot of companies do utilize, which, you know, for those who are neurotypical, it's that there is an advantage to hearing yourself back, you know, having that feedback and understanding how you can improve. Otherwise, you'll never improve yourself. What are you seeing in terms of landscape, you know, just to sidetrack for this question, really, you know, when we look at neurodiverse people, how are they responding to things like recording software and feedback and constructive? Because I know that we have a lot of listeners who are on that spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the online training really came into its own, where they could be on their own, they could focus, they could watch a video, see the text at the same time, pause it, go back, do that again. So whichever element they have from a neurodiverse point of view, it worked really well for them. And lockdown worked really well for a lot of people as well. And I think that's where we started to realise, we've probably created a lot of clones in recruitment, these outgoing, bubbly personalities that are possibly in your face a little bit, which from a sales point of view, okay, you need some of those, but you need the others as well. One of my favorite videos that I got shown, it must have been 91, early in my career, was it was called The Job, but it was John Cleese. Was it Handmade Films? I'm trying to remember the company that they created workplace videos as well. So like the team behind Monty Python and everything. And it showed John Cleese as this loud, brash person ringing up these people and trying to sell them stuff. And then you had this quiet person that just systematically went through things, had a process, had a structure to what they were asking, listened to people. So wasn't doing most of the talking. And you saw that juxtaposition where it was the quiet, reserved person.
I was going
to
say, who was the most effective, Angela? All know who they are.
Ask the questions.
I think I remember watching that, by the way. I mean, look, accessibility is really important. And for those who have visual disabilities or hearing disabilities, or even those who are, you know, physically incapable of going to an office, I think that's where we could have a whole different podcast on the remote versus hybrid versus office, which I don't think we've got time to cover today. But I'm glad that I brought that up with you. And I think, you know, I've always been a huge advocate for it takes a diverse, talented, you know, workforce to make a successful business. I think I've always shied away, even when I was probably a lot brasher in my youth, in my 20s. I've definitely evolved and become the person that I am, and recognize that if you are talented at what you do, it shouldn't matter whether you're flamboyant or whether you're this or that. And actually, some of the best recruiters I've placed would describe themselves as introverted. But then they can really penetrate a relationship with somebody because it's very authentic, and it's not the loudest person in the room, it's the one who has the most meaning.
The listening skills, we just can't emphasize that enough. So I love the fact now with AI they're giving you the percentage as well, because we always used to say 80-20 Pareto, we use that so much, don't we? But when you're doing a client meeting, or if you're doing a business development call, that you're aiming for 80% them talking, 20% you, same with me on my podcast, exactly as you're doing now, you want the guest to be doing 80% of the talking. So utilizing AI in that way, where it's actually telling you at the end of the conversation, how much did you do the talking? You see that and you go, oh, okay, I need to shut up a little bit more and listen a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I agree with you totally. And it's a bit like watching a football match, isn't it? Knowing who's had the possession and seeing at the end of it. So I think it's really intriguing. But, you know, good listening skills are they teachable?
Yeah, definitely. Because again, it's about what are the barriers to listening. There's so many barriers to listening. So if you can take those away, and it might be that you didn't get enough sleep, or you haven't eaten, you've got a dog attacking the post downstairs. Don't know if you heard that.
No.
So there's lots of external things that stop you from listening to start with. So being aware of that can actually help straight away. It's not even just you, it's everything else around you and what's going on. But then it's focusing on that questioning ability, the skill, the knowledge to ask what, when, to really probe. And those probing questions are a recruiter's best friend. And it's then shut up, let them answer.
Absolutely brilliant advice. And you know, just even just you saying all that last bit, just it takes me right back to the start of my career 26 years ago, that being able to ask a question and then shutting up and being an active listener, not just waiting for them to finish to say the next bit, is a life skill to learn. And it will, it's not just as a recruiter we're enhancing your skills here, as a human being, you will become a much better listener and a much kinder, more compassionate listener. And you'll be surprised at how more effective I think you are as a communicator. People always think recruiters like to talk more, but I think we actually listen more, the ones that are successful and endure.
I'd agree with that. So if we can get that in that initial onboarding part we talked about earlier, that first 6 months, really critical. At the 6 month point, and we used to always have probations at 3 months. I think that's way too short for a recruiter. Yeah. We always pushed it for 6 months, and I think that's more the standard now, from what I've seen.
I agree.
In the industry anyway.
Yeah.
So 6 months, 3 months, you want to know what you're doing. By 6 months, you want it to be working well for you. So I don't expect you to be able to do it all by 3 months, but I want you to know it all by 3 months of that sort of first year's recruiter. Of course, there's so many levels to it, but let's get that starting point to it. And then I want them at 3 months to look back and go, okay, this is my plan for months 4, 5, and 6. And they present that as part of their onboarding process.
Love
they
it.
Have to do a presentation. They have to analyze what they've done. They have to work out, well, what do I need to do to pass my probation? If they don't know, you've not done your job, because those expectations should be there, not even from day one, from the interview, from the offer.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to be doing with you in the first 6 months. So if you've got that schedule written out, if you've got the objectives, what you want them to achieve, if you've got all of the training and the development set up, and you mentioned earlier about getting external people in. Yes, but you don't even have to pay for that either. We talked about the Recruitment Expo. Mm-hmm. I've been doing sessions there at Birmingham for a good 10 years now that it's been there. So there are 20 free training sessions on those 2 days.
Literally.
That you can go and access from external people. So, yeah, obviously there are companies out there. We offer 8 pro bono courses. There's 500 sessions there. I forgot about that. There we go. Not the Recruitment Expo. Use us. There's so much.
Well, I was going to say, but do both. Listen to this podcast. Go and listen to all the other podcasts out there. I think that's the reality. But I also really want to hone in on the leaders listening. It absolutely is your responsibility to ensure that you have got this set out, and it's not just an off-the-shelf thing. It has to ensure that every single individual that you choose to hire and that accepts your job, from literally offer acceptance, has got this expectation mapped out for them. So that it's not just by the way, you're doing this on day one.
We know it makes a difference. The company I worked with down in Bristol and did their onboarding program for them, they were then recruiting, like you saying, they wanted experienced people. They were a more exec search firm, quite high level. So they were bringing in people with experience. This person had 5 options to choose from. 5 companies wanted her.
Wow.
And there were big corporates. This company was a small company of 10 and thought, we've got no chance. But because during the interview process, they'd showed what their induction and onboarding program was and what
Absolutely.
They were going to cover with them and what they were going to do. She specifically said, I chose you because of that.
Because I knew
exactly what I had to do in those first 6 months, and I knew you were going to support me through it as well. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I've been successful elsewhere, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be successful in a new
company. No, it doesn't.
Different environment, different manager, totally different results. So knowing that she had all that support and backup and those what she knew what she needed to do, she said it made it an easy answer for me. So, yes, get your onboarding processes
and communicate it during the interview process. Make it part of the process, which clearly for them, whether it was contrived or not, that's why this unicorn, by the sounds of it, chose to go and work there, which is fantastic. Before we finish, I want to, you know, as we record this now at the start of summer 2024, we hopefully will be hitting, the bounce, hopefully, as we've come out of the election. In fact, if this goes live, it's probably around then. What one thing, regardless of how much experience anybody has, what one thing should every recruiter listening do today to upskill themselves ready for the bounce?
Whether it's upskill, I think the most important thing that I learned in recruitment was your network. They say your network is your net worth. My mum used to always put into me, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
So linking it back to who am I networked with? Who am I following? You said that you felt you knew me already because you'd seen a lot of the stuff that I'd done. It's out there. You don't have to spend any money. You have to spend time. Yeah. So invest time in yourself, in creating that network that's going to pay you dividends over and over again over the years. But make sure it's people that you can learn from.
Absolutely.
I didn't know it, but that's what I got. So I was very lucky because it was organic with me. So I know now if I had my time again, I wouldn't wait for that to happen. I would be out there. I would be networking. I would be identifying people that I know can make a difference to my career, that are there to support people in the industry. And there are lots of us out there that just want our industry to be better, better skilled, better way that we're perceived, better perception within the industry. And therefore, if we are better skilled, then that's going to have that knock-on effect. We're going to do good in what we do. We're not going to cut corners. We're not going to do it wrong. We're not going to do people wrong. And that's what we want for our industry and always have. So those people are out there. Go find them. Go learn from them.
Yeah, go and connect. First thing you need to do, if you're listening to this now, is go and follow Angela on LinkedIn. What you just said there, I don't know if you've ever listened to the pod, but in my intro, I actually say this is about creating a community of people that want to be highly regarded and want to be respected because of the perception that they're creating within their own industry. And I think by having people like you, absolutely, you were one of the pioneers. You know, you've been doing this a very, very long time, and your energy, your passion, your integrity is so inspiring and infectious and contagious. And I hope everybody listening from this today has taken a step back and thought, right, what can I do? Either with my team, if you are a leader of a business, or as a recruiter, or even as a newbie, as we've talked about, what can you do today to have that impact? So I can't thank you enough, Angela. And we can't wait to see you. The Recruitment Expo in Birmingham is free to attend. I would recommend everybody to get to the Recruitment Expo. And a big shout out to Louise Triance as well. She's a very dear friend of mine too. So
thank
you so
much. She's the first person
much.
I would recommend that you network with. She is Miss Network. Mrs. Network.
She is recruitment. Literally. She's unbelievable. Thank you so much for joining us on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. It's been an absolute joy.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in Keybridge IT. Keybridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, Keybridge IT Solutions is a London-based, fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know Keybridge IT.
We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society, and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell, you have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent, but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.